In this episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations, we're delving into the connective tissue that links Wes Craven's 1991 The People Under the Stairs with Fede Alvarez's 2016 Don't Breathe. While both films feature protagonists breaking into homes only to discover unexpected horrors, do they send similar messages? And how do the urban environments depicted in the films factor into that messaging? I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Keatley.
We're breaking it all down on today's episode, so stay tuned.
Well, we're going to start by just laying out the plots of these two films, and just from that, you can see how similar they are. In Wes Craven's People Under the Stairs, three people break into a suburban house where mommy and daddy live with the people under the stairs, not surprisingly. And the three people break in, one of them, and then two of them are killed fairly early on. The third person, Fool, manages to survive, gets away, comes back to save people who are trapped in the house. And at the end of the film, the house kind of gets blown up and all the money that mommy and daddy were hoarding gets scattered across the neighborhood. In Fede Alvarez's Don't Breathe, again, we have three people breaking into a house. This is an urban house, an abandoned area of Detroit. And again, they run into the owner of the house, who is hoarding a lot of money. As part of the break-in, they end up in the basement. As Fool had in People Under the Stairs, there's something pretty horrifying down in the basement. And a couple of the invaders get killed. We'll talk about the ending, I guess, of Don't Breathe later on. But as in the ending of People Under the Stairs, somebody escapes and the money is kind of loosed from the person who was hanging on to all that money. Lots of similarities, but I think we'll get into some differences along the way. I guess we were going to start with the people who break into the house. Like, who are they in these two films? What's the difference between those who break in, the invaders and People Under the Stairs, and those in Don't Breathe?
I mean, I think in both circumstances, both films, you have the individuals that are breaking into the homes are coming from a lower economic, socioeconomic status, and they feel kind of trapped in their circumstances. For whatever reasons, they get either goaded or kind of cajoled into breaking into these homes with the idea that there's some kind of bunch of money there, like Scrooge McDuck money. In People Under the Stairs, Fool is the young man that is really kind of brought into the ring because he's told it his manly duty to be able to provide money to help support his family, his mother and his sister and her children and whatnot. And if he doesn't do it, he's almost not man enough.
Yeah.
I think in Don't Breathe, it's a little bit more about Rocky trying to escape her circumstances. Like, this is an opportunity to get out.
I mean, we'll talk about Rocky, who I like less and less the more I think about her. But okay, like, to give her credit, she, like Fool, is trying to help a family member, right? She's not breaking in to get this money just for herself. She kind of wants to save her little sister from a home life that is trailer park, no money. There's a suggestion of abusive kinds of situations going on.
Yeah, locked in the trunk. Right.
Oh, yeah. She was locked in a trunk by her mother. That's pretty abusive. So, yeah, Rocky has her reasons for wanting the money.
I agree. I think in the beginning, I didn't blame anybody. I'm not saying that that would be my out, but I'm also not in those circumstances.
Yeah.
I started the film liking all of them. Both of these films, I liked all these kids that ended up breaking into the homes. But that significantly changed for Don't Breathe.
I think for me, going back and rewatching People Under the Stairs now, I had a totally different take on Fool because it starts with him saying, okay, it's my 13th birthday. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, Gwen, you know, now you're the man of the house.
Yeah, the tarot cards and tell you got to jump off that cliff and become a man.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just the way culturally we look at African-American boys. Mm-hmm. And sort of thrust all of these different ideas of masculinity onto them. Watching it in 2019, it read even more menacing. But I did like how Leroy factors into this story because Leroy is the character who comes in and he's the boyfriend of Fool's sister. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who says, okay, listen, little man, I need your help. You're going to come and I'm going to teach you a skill set. And I think it would be really easy to read Leroy as just being this horrible influence. But from his perspective, he doesn't really see a future for Fool where he can actually become a doctor, which is what he says he wants to be. So instead, he is actually teaching him a skill that he believes will fundamentally help to make life better for him and his family.
I agree. And I think that he diverges from that character of Money in Don't Breathe, because I think he's really used as a tool to set the stage for almost like a Robin Hood scenario.
Right.
Like, he sets the stage like, these are terrible people. Yeah. They're ruining our community. They're taking our homes and our livelihoods. And you know what? They deserve it. It's our money anyway that they're holding on to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting, too, because there's the one scene where Fool really steps to him and you think Leroy is going to become super violent to him. And he does hit him, but he stops. And it doesn't sort of segue into abuse, mm-hmm. I would say. Whereas in Don't Breathe, you get Rocky's backstory, which does read as more abusive. But what really fascinated me about Leroy is that you read him as one character going through it. And then right in the middle of the film, when he realized it's pretty much lights out for himself, he's like, run, Fool, and he's trying to get Fool out of the house at his own expense.
Now, just kind of side thought, do you think that the whole entire narrative or the perspective of Fool would have changed if he was an older male? Do you think that it had to really be that he was kind of that coming of age?
I think that definitely plays into it, because he's sort of working from a position of, I don't really understand completely what it is that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so I think that makes him inherently more sympathetic. But given his circumstances and given the family that he's sort of breaking into the house of, I think he could be 17 or 18 and still be sympathetic. Because once you go through those doors and you see what that family is like, they're so horrific.
I actually do think Fool's age is really important, because it's talked about numerous times. I think Leroy mentions it, that he's not quite a sexual being yet. Mm-hmm. He's still innocent. He's still a child. And I think that his and Alice's relationship is kind of importantly non-sexual. Like the, and I think it's the innocence of the two of them that kind of makes, I don't know, makes the narrative all the more powerful. I think if he was older, 16, 17, it would have been hard not to read his relationship with Alice in some sort of sexual way, which I think would have detracted from the kind of purity of it, basically. I mean, this film is kind of about purity and dirt and cleanliness and uncleanliness.
I agree. And I think it just goes a long way to show that, you know, since we prefaced the whole film with his sister reading his tarot cards, talking about him becoming a man and him having to, you know, jump off that cliff and take those steps, I think that it's important to show that he did kind of come out a man and a good one.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that that was important to it, too, because he's got that youth and he's growing into something.
Yeah. And he cares about Alice in a completely altruistic, non-sexual way. I mean, when you think about Alex, for instance, in Don't Breathe, you know, he comes back kind of for Rocky to help her. But there's that sexual interest. Like, we know he's interested in her. So that just makes it a little more selfish than, say, Fool, who I think is just a completely good, selfless person. He goes back to save Alice because it's the right thing to do.
I think you're right about the age, too, because with Roach, there is sort of that undercurrent of, is he romantically interested in Alice? And really the only difference is because all three of them are sort of in similar circumstances once they enter into the house is the age.
Yeah.
Because he reads as, what, 16 or 17?
Yeah, he looks older.
So.
Yeah.
And I definitely got the sense in Don't Breathe that Alex wouldn't have been there if he didn't have the hots for Rocky.
Yeah,
oh,
definitely.
100%.
Like, that was a driving factor. Yeah. And I think that Fool is just so different. He also serves to show that when traditional institutes can't be there, like the police department and the law and so many other things, he came back. He didn't have to.
Yeah.
You know, it was not in his best physical interest to return, and he could save the day when traditional institutions couldn't.
Yeah.
So what do you make of, like, the super pale mutant cannibals? I mean, because, you know, they're my favorite. Well, I just think that it's pretty interesting that, like, literally, we were talking earlier about how this is kind of an indictment on Reagan's America. You see the pictures of Ronald Reagan. You have Daddy.
Daddy looks
hair
just like Ronald
quaffed.
Reagan. Yeah.
Exactly the same.
It's oiled down. Just like
amazing.
Reagan.
Yeah.
As slick as he was. And like I said, Nancy Reagan's red dress, too. I mean, because the mommy comes out wearing that red dress at one point, too. And kind of that overburdening, overwhelming family values of convenience, too.
What do you think this film was saying about Reagan's America? Because there's obvious critiques happening, wealth distribution, race.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it completely takes aim at trickle-down economics, right? I mean, which was Reagan's view that, you know, let the wealthy get wealthier and wealthier and wealthier, and it'll flow down to the rest of the population. I mean, this is this gives the lie to that completely. It's like, the wealthy get wealthy, and they literally hoard it in their house mm-hmm. and just strip everything they can from anyone else.
I think there's an interesting way, too, that the police as a concept are deployed in both films. So in People Under the Stairs, you have like those great scenes of literally the police officers are in the home and they're looking around. And because this looks like a quote unquote nice, normal, I would say white family, there's no suspicion.
Yeah, we believe everything you say. Oh, they don't even have kids.
There's so much artifice. Yeah. And just the fact that the police are willing to take mommy and daddy at their words, even though if you were to even just remotely look around, things look weird.
Well, I think that even just the police's willingness to listen to mommy and daddy just shows that they were aligned with a certain mentality, like what side they're on. And they really go throughout the film trying to show, I mean, they drop the N-word, you know, the mommy and daddy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they talk yeah. about how it says the neighborhood is changing and it has all of us on edge. And sometimes it makes it feel like we're the ones that, you yeah. know, we're the victims.
Or we're the prisoners or something.
Yeah.
yeah.
Hence the bars.
Yeah. Right.
So kind of signifying that. So maybe the police, it wouldn't raise any alarm bells to them because they're like, oh, well, yeah, we feel that way too, which shows why they were so ineffective.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember. How did the police figure into Don't Breathe?
They weren't there until
the end.
Well, and I mean, if you think about the legal system in itself, I mean, that leads to a lot of problems for me when it comes to the blind man.
That was his part of his victimization.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the people that have money will get off and he won't.
For me, it was the fact that there is not a police presence. Before they break into the house, they make note of the fact that he's by himself.
Yeah.
The community is run down. I mean, there's still nice houses, pretty much. I mean, mm-hmm. there's like overgrown bush and whatnot. But they make note of the fact that the police never bother to go there because, you know, it's just run down. It's considered not to be.
I don't think anyone, and no one lives there anymore, right? Except for the blind man. Except, I think it's completely deserted.
Right. Abandoned. And so the fact
that appears to be since he can yeah. drag people down the street by their
yeah.
head.
It's such a great shot though.
it really is.
Yeah,
it really
was. Really is. But I think just the fact of they concentrate on what it is they value and they dismiss that, which they don't value. I mean, they still know that a blind veteran is living in the house. Like you think you would do just a
the occasional
ride by
loop, yeah.
just every now and yeah. again, but they don't.
Because I kept thinking about mommy and daddy is like, what are they saying about parenthood? And, you know, because first of all, I had to remember how they got these kids. Because I was like, yo, who
they
the
kidnapped,
hell
they kidnapped,
would give
right?
them, you know, yeah. what foster agency or what, you know.
Yeah.
So that would have said something again about other institutions. But yeah, they were baby snatchers.
Okay.
So we find that out from the grandfather that they were just straight up baby snatchers. So then what does it say? That nobody missed these kids. Nobody went looking for these kids. And they pretty much lived out their lives in there. So they were possibly from places that they could go not that missed.
I don't know. It's weird. Like with the kids in particular, we probably should make note of the fact that mommy and daddy are not their brother and sister. And the fact that the community knows this.
Yeah.
And yet just
well,
sort of
one part of the community,
one part
it.
Of the
Correct.
Community
yeah.
knows it and just sort of accepts it, I think is really, really interesting because it's almost like you can be as perverted and crazy as you want to be as long as you are the ones who are holding the purse strings, basically.
It's interesting that mommy and daddy were almost the urban legend
for
that community compared to something like a Candyman, you know, where he's the urban legend there. And they were just. It's almost like the community was in the know about the actual facts
mm-hmm.
and they accepted it, not accepted it, but passed it down as, you know, generational knowledge as opposed to the police who were blindsided by all this. And what do you mean there's kids in the house? No, they're not nice people. What do you mean?
Which is exactly like what happens in Candyman. The police don't do anything really to help the Cabrini Green community until Helen, the white woman, is attacked.
Yeah.
So, you know, you ask yourself in People Under the Stairs, the community knew this. It was sort of folklore. Why didn't they do something about it? Well, I think the film shows that all the institutions that were sort of, you know, provide the scaffold of our lives or whatever, there's no way they would have listened to what the community was saying about who mommy and daddy
bias.
Are. Yeah.
I did like the way both films play with disability, just the way sight versus deafness function in both films was really, really interesting to me.
With the director in Don't Breathe, he was talking about how he was consciously trying to change the idea of the quote-unquote monster, so the blind man, because he's positioned as the monster in the film. And he said that in so many horror films, we make these monsters that have extra abilities. So of course they're going to be so monstrous. They're extra strong. They don't die when you shoot them. So he was like, I purposely made him blind so that he would have essentially a deficit. That's my words, not his. A deficit to show that he didn't have these extraordinary abilities.
He made that conscious choice to kind of put his monster, if you want to call him that, at a disadvantage.
Yeah, he was calling it a disadvantage.
See, that doesn't, I mean, it does track, but it also doesn't track when you think of other horror films. So I'm thinking, like, this isn't specifically horror, but it kind of falls within the genre. It's the Audrey Hepburn.
Wait Until Dark?
Wait Until Dark.
Where she's blind.
Right. Yeah. And she also winds up turning off the lights in order to evade the assailant. There's also, I wrote down Jennifer 8, because Jennifer 8 was the one that I was like, well, that's not a good depiction.
I'm not saying it's a bad depiction, because look, this guy kicks all their asses. And yeah. He's strong. Yeah. And he's smarter than them. He's faster than them. And he's everything is better about him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing that made it problematic for me is when I read that he made a conscious choice to almost put him at a disadvantage.
Why consider that a disadvantage?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
But the film itself doesn't show him that way, I don't think, as disadvantaged.
Yeah, I mean, that's because...
By his sight.
That's because Rocky and Money and Alex are so...
Dumb.
Yeah, dumb, pathetic, sort of completely incapable of acting.
The one thing before we leave sort of people under the stairs, because it sounds like we're getting into Don't Breathe, is what did you guys make of basically the consumption scene at the end with Mommy? Because that felt, I don't know if you guys have seen Suddenly Last Summer, where it's very contrived movie, but it basically ends with one person who has been going into a community and trying to, like, abuse young boys, literally being consumed by the community turns cannibalistic.
Whoa.
And literally consumes him. And it's got Elizabeth Taylor and it's great. But
and they literally cannibalize him.
Oh, right. Wow. And that's like the sort of the hook of the movie is she's repressed this memory. And at the end, you're like, what's going to happen? And they all chase him up a hill and then they eat him. It's great.
Wow. I can't believe that. And when did that come out?
Oh, God.
Was like decade.
Yeah. The 50s, I believe.
The 50s. That's what I thought.
Was it the 60s? It was either the 50s or 60s, but I think it might have been the 50s. Yeah. It has Katharine Hepburn in it, too. So
I don't know. My brain is stuck on Little Shop of Horrors because all I'm thinking of is Suddenly Seymour right now as soon as you said that.
No, this is Suddenly Last Summer.
Yeah. As you speak.
And I probably didn't sell it well. But the point being that there's this graphic for the time consumption scene, which sort of mimics what we saw in People Under the Stairs. Did you feel any sympathy for her?
For her?
Or were you like,
no,
get to noshing people?
I had no sympathy for Mommy or Daddy at all.
Ever.
Once.
I didn't either.
No.
Yeah.
Completely devoid of sympathy.
I mean, and that scene is kind of led up to by the earlier horrific scene when Daddy is eating Leroy in the basement.
Yes.
And, you know, I did have sympathy for Leroy. So, I mean, yeah, I never had a scintilla of sympathy for Mommy or Daddy at any point. And that may actually be a flaw in the movie.
I think so, too.
I mean, they're caricatures. Doesn't Craven take it just a little bit too far?
See, I don't. If you think about if you're looking at that time period of Reagan and whatnot like that, there's a lot of
cannibalism.
Performativity. Just even their performance of being religious, their performance of family values, and their so I think that they were really meant to be caricatures to speak on that time period.
I'm trying to think of what the movie would have looked like if they had complicated those characters even a little bit. And I don't know. I think it works maybe because they are so black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe so.
The one scene that stood out to me was when Alice was put in the bathtub with the scalding hot water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was I actually found that to be a difficult scene to watch. And I think we get more scenes of outright abuse in this movie than we do in Don't Breathe. And I'm not defending what the main character does in Don't Breathe necessarily, but he does take care not to be abusive because in his mind, he's just righting a wrong.
I feel like in People Under the Stairs, too, like there was a purposeful intent to comment on suburbia, too. That just because you have money and live in a nicer house doesn't mean that you've made it. It doesn't mean that you're okay. It's kind of like that whole Peyton Place kind of notion that everything's not what it really is just because that outside shell looks the way it does. And
the veneer of normalcy.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff that happens behind everybody's doors. Everybody's. I don't care where you come from. It can happen anywhere. But I think that it was really trying to kind of tear down that idea of they have a better and that's normal. Because if you're talking about family life, Leroy's family's got it, hands down.
When I was watching Don't Breathe, the blind man was so sympathetic to me.
Yes.
Because on the face of it, you should be just absolutely shocked and mortified that he has this woman, he's holding her against her will, and he forced impregnated her. These are horrific things. And yet, it's presented in such a way that you can kind of understand why he was motivated to do a lot of this.
That makes it a better movie for me than The People Under the Stairs. I mean, I just come back to the caricature of Mommy and Daddy and the fact that they're not even real people. Like, it's impossible to imagine having sympathy for them because they're just cardboard cutouts. I mean, they do stand in for sort of Reagan's America. And I think there's a little distance on Reagan. Like, you know, he was president through 89. So we're 2 years after his presidency. We're still with the Republicans, with Bush. This is pre-Clinton. But I just think there's a kind of, I don't know, there's like a dehumanization of Mommy and Daddy that I think is likely to turn off some people to the political message. I don't know.
There are so many markers of trying to situate the movie within a particular political landscape. I'm thinking of the footage on the TV of the Gulf War.
The Gulf War, yeah.
And it's clearly trying to make a connection between what was happening politically and what's happening in the film. What do you think?
I think I'm always super excited when Alice, she was from My So-Called Life.
She was?
Yeah. It took me forever to realize that was Rayanne.
Who was she?
Forever.
Rayanne Graff.
What?
Yes.
Really?
Oh my gosh, yeah, my favorite character probably on that show.
You know, I knew that I recognized her from somewhere.
Yeah, and that was, what, 94, 95 that she did that.
That is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yes, and I have the box set.
The box set?
And wow. I also have the soundtrack to the whole series.
Of course you do.
I do. Yeah. I don't know. I think for me, they did something that I wanted them to do is criticize some of those things that people just take for granted. And sometimes the rich white folk down the block are monsters and they do horrific things. And if we don't realize that, we're not going to catch it. Because if we have these terrible, terrible blind biases, then yeah, it's just going to keep going on. And then we're just going to be participating in the same crazy, greedy BS that they participate in. But if you're not the type of person that has that knowledge of, you know, capitalism and conservatism and what was going on at the time period, yeah, I'm sure you could just look at them and be like, damn, them people are crazy and miss a lot.
I mean, I think, and especially Mommy in this regard, because I think she sort of takes the lead on it. I think they're just... It's not even really about money. It's about safety, kind of, but also sort of purity. Mm-hmm. And it's about keeping out the dangerous, unwanted, dirty forces and, you know, just like erecting their little pure, clean, white fortress. It's almost not even about money, though. I mean, one of you said earlier that the house seemed kind of run down. Yeah. And that's what really struck me. Like, the house was really run down. And there was Daddy just, like, shooting up the walls, not really caring.
There's people defecating in the walls because they make a point to say that. Yeah. Roach always does his business in the walls. Yeah.
And they're obviously obsessed with kind of getting him out. But it's almost like the money is less important to them than this sort of purity. I mean, that's what Mommy freaks out about with Alice. Like, when she gets her nice white dress dirty, like, she has to clean it up and sort of clean her. It's about sort of how kind of racial division is built on something other than economics. Like, it's about contempt, fear of pollution, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, it's about money, too, but it's also about that.
Yeah.
Like, Fool is just dirty to them. Leroy is just dirty to them.
And Roach is literally named after a roach.
Yeah. Right.
That filthy thing in the walls that nobody wants in their home.
Yeah. And maybe that's why they have to be the way they are, like such caricatures, because there is no middle ground. When you believe that, like, mm-hmm. you just got to set up the borders and keep people on the other side. Like, there's just no middle ground. So we should delve into the blind man and the ways in which he is different from Mommy and Daddy, which is, like, in every way. He's completely different, mostly because he's a real human being. And he doesn't, I don't know what you guys think about this, but he doesn't seem to represent a particular kind of politics, does he? When I've taught this, I mean, given the time it was made, 2016, you can kind of pull him in as your sort of typical Trump supporter, right? I mean, he's in the Rust Belt, the industrial rundown part of the middle of the country. He's white, he's older, he's a vet, but then he feels disenfranchised.
But what throws that off then is, I think, the point that Liz made earlier, too, is that there was, like, no support for a veteran. Like, the cops don't even drive by. And so I think that that's what helps kind of even push him away from any side, like you said.
Okay.
Because he wasn't valued for his service. He wasn't valued for being a father. He wasn't valued for really any of the fantastic things he had done prior.
Yeah.
What interests me about him is that we're never really given an explanation as to why he accepted the money. Because what winds up happening in the film is that his daughter is killed by a hit and run, I think, right?
Yeah, by the girl in the basement.
Right,
yeah.
By a wealthy woman, and the court system completely fails him. So instead of her getting jail time, he gets X amount of money.
Yeah.
And so right out of the gate, he's going to be more sympathetic because he's already been screwed over by the system. So in that respect, he's closer to Fool than he would be Mommy and Daddy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Literally, yeah. The system is against him. What is interesting to me, though, is I couldn't figure out why he accepted the money, because he does keep it in a safe. And I guess the only justification I could think of is, well, maybe from the jump, he had the plan of, okay, you've taken my daughter from me. I'm going to make sure that you replace my daughter, because yeah. that's the only equitable answer to this. And I'm going to need money for that child's yeah, future.
For his daughter. And what's wrong with that plan, I might add?
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking real justice, I can see a case being made for, you know, if you're really somebody who believes an eye for an eye.
Eye for an eye. Child
then
for a child.
Is, yeah, then yeah. this is sort of the natural way this ends.
I mean, he says that we never get a chance to see if he means this, but he says the very little bit he speaks when he's talking to Rocky, right? He says, I'm not a rapist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I never force myself on her. And obviously, that's a highly problematic statement. but I'm just saying what he said. I promised I would set her free just as soon as she gave me a child. And that's the crucial part in relation to what we were just talking about. I mean, right. he just wanted a child, and he was going to set this woman free when he got his child, which right. she took away from him.
And I mean, obviously, we know, I would argue, it's clearly a case of rape because there's forced penetration. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Forced insemination.
Absolutely.
It sounds like a definition of rape.
100%. Yeah. But the fact that, because Gwen and I were talking about this, the fact that he took such care to make sure that this person who killed his daughter would be made comfortable, like, that room, she's all on cushions.
She has plants.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, part of that probably is to make sure that she doesn't get quite as stressed because she's being used as a human incubator this fetus. But he has taken some care toward not making her suffer for no reason from his perspective. I mean, obviously our perspective is different, but I would say that this is a guy really thrust in the heart of trauma. Like, I think mm-hmm. the way PTSD functions in this film in particular is so interesting, because you have not only the blind man suffering from clear PTSD, not only from being a veteran, but also from the death of his daughter. But then I would also argue that you have Rocky experiencing PTSD as a result of growing up with an abusive mother. And so we have two characters at loggerheads who are, I think, both sympathetic in their own way because of the PTSD element. I know you don't find Rocky sympathetic at all.
Yeah,
I have more sympathy, I think.
We will talk about Rocky for sure. But just what you said, Liz, made me think that, you know, in terms of the politics of Don't Breathe, it actually seems like a very hardcore pro-life film in that the woman doesn't matter. I mean, he has to keep her body functioning and healthy. She's an incubator. And all that matters is the fetus and then the baby. I mean, that really, that kind of logic falls pretty hard on the pro-life side of the abortion debate, right? That the life of what's inside this woman is much more important than her, you know? So just a little aside, I hadn't thought of it in that way before. But he's obviously not political. He just wants his own child.
Right.
I'm hugely sympathetic to him from the beginning, though actually not from the beginning. I think it was a really interesting choice of Alvarez's to start with the shot of him dragging the woman down the street, because that kind of that makes Rocky look like the victim and him look like, you know, the monster, like right there at the beginning of the film. But then when we meet the blind man in his house later on, to me, he always feels like something of a victim. Everything about him.
That's the point I was going to go to next, too, is just I think that they almost consciously tried to set him up as a potential bad guy in the beginning, not only by having him drag her down the street by her head, but the next couple comments that happen in the very, very beginning of the film is when they're talking about hitting him as a mark, they call him an army vet loner, and they talk about just because he's blind, he's not a saint.
Don't make him a saint.
So they purposely try to say...
That's what money, that moral
he might
arbiter.
Not be a good guy in their position. But yeah. I guess I just never bought it, because when I heard his story, his backstory, I was team blind man or Norman Nordstrom the whole entire time. Like,
right.
I think I was just so aligned with him. I was like, God, he was victimized over and over and over. And again, kind of like we were talking about how, you know, structures of or institutions of our society have their blind spots and they fail a lot of people. He was failed left and right by just the system itself. At no point is it okay to just break into people's houses and take the stuff you want.
Yeah.
It's not okay. And this even goes to, you know, people under the stairs. It's still not okay to break into people's houses. I just was a lot more sympathetic to Fool and that narrative and not sympathetic to Mommy and Daddy.
Well, and people under the stairs, and you said it earlier, like Mommy and Daddy had their money.
Yeah.
Like they were screwing them over and they were keeping the money. And, you know, like we get the little snippet at the beginning that because Ruby and, you know, her family didn't pay the rent exactly on time, they have to pay three times the rent.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
that's robbery. It's just flat out robbery. So in a sense, I really did feel Fool was going in to get his money back.
Yeah.
But what right did Rocky have to this man's money? I mean, that's just the
central question. He paid his time to the country.
Yeah.
He
provided
them the freedoms that they had.
Like
I said, it's still not okay, but I was just so team him at that point.
I do agree with what you're saying. And I think the reason that in People Under the Stairs, we definitely get a context for why Fool is breaking into the house, which makes him sympathetic. We don't get that same context for Rocky. We know she wants to get out of her living environment.
She wants to go to California.
Right, but it's nothing. Exactly.
Fool was 13.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's not any sort of real rationale. But going back to what you said about how the film positions the blind man as the monster from the jump, I think maybe that's what the film is getting at, is that a lot of times we perceive people as monstrous, but if you dial back a little bit and look into their story, you can kind of understand how they got to be that way. As the film progresses, I think it becomes increasingly debatable whether or not he's the monster or whether or not the kids breaking into his house are the monster.
The kids are monsters. And I actually have a real problem with the film opening that way, because I do think Alvarez might have opened the film that way to completely bias us to think that Rocky is the victim and the blind man is the monster. So we forget to ask questions like, what the hell right does she have to his money? I definitely understand that she has an abusive background, that she's trying to save her little sister, but that honestly, like, get a job or something. I mean, maybe there's a sense in which her mother at least implies prostitution is your only option.
But she's
I don't buy that. So, I mean, he actually had surprisingly little ill will to Cindy, given that she killed his daughter.
Yeah.
He did keep her comfortable. He did say he was going to let her go. But I don't know if he would have.
Well, he seems to think, I'm going to give you your life back. He says, in 9 months, I would have given her her life back.
Yeah.
And I believe him.
Yeah, oh, I believe him too, but...
That's the strange part. Like, how does that actually transpire?
Also, well, yeah.
It can't.
But then again, it kind of speaks to fatherhood. He was like, there's nothing a man can't do once he accepts that there's no God.
Mm-hmm.
And he just talks about, you don't understand the bond between a father and a daughter. And I think that he's just hit this wall, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, and that there's nothing else.
And it sort of mimics in People Under the Stairs, mommy's determination to have a child.
Yeah.
And a child that represents what she believes a child should be. You see, it's very sympathetic in the beginning. Right when they break into the house, you see him asleep and there's the home movies playing in the background.
Like his daughter.
And he's basically trying to duplicate a person that's already existed. So he's not really necessarily interested in a child. To raise a child, he's interested in duplicating an experience he's already had.
Yeah. I just can't get over the fact that these young people just feel like they are entitled to his money. This is a generational thing, and I think I would probably feel a bit differently about the film and its dynamics if I were 19.
Yeah.
Say, I would probably be much more Team Rocky. You know, because if I were 19, I would be like, yeah, she's young. She's got her whole life ahead of her. She needs to go to California. She needs to be able to surf at the beach. Because, you know, like... It's not like she's running away to find the cure for cancer or, you know, world hunger. She just wants to
go out.
But it's interesting that parallel that I'm just thinking of now, because now she's essentially going to become the mother to her sister. And she did this for her, quote unquote, daughter. So it's almost she would do anything for that daughter, which is the same perspective that he's coming from, too, is there's that bond that you would have.
Yeah.
Done anything for, you wouldn't have, you know, you would risk anything for.
Which explains why he lets her get away with the money in the end.
I agree.
Yeah. What do you think is going through his mind at the end that he lets her get away, doesn't report her to the police, most importantly, I guess?
I don't know, but it's interesting, too, that whole dynamic at the very end of the film, it just kind of changes. It's kind of like this historical memory thing, because now all of a sudden he's a Iraq hero.
Right.
You know,
instead
of in the beginning where they position him as the army vet loner and who could possibly be, you know, not a saint. And then now you finish it and all of a sudden he's this war hero who was just victimized.
And it's still another example of the system failing him, because the only reason they're interested in him is because it's salacious and they can put it on the news. And so, of course, they're going to frame him as a hero because it makes a better narrative.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's really not about him and helping him get justice.
I guess the reason, I mean, you know, because it struck me at the end when he says to her, you got what you came for, take it and get out of my house. I mean, that makes me feel even more sympathetic to him, too, because I think the money, and this goes back to, you asked, like, why did he take the money? It was for his child. And I think he's like, my baby's dead. The other girl I was going to impregnate has escaped. I have no baby. I have no child. I don't need the money.
And he's accepted he's never going to win.
Yeah,
I think he's just now learned that systematically he will always lose, whether it's in the court of law or even just, you know, taking the money. It might have been like, well, I already know that this rich person is going to get away with something. So I'm just going to take what I can and put it to whatever use I can in the future. And, you know, the police aren't going to help me. And, you know, the next generation isn't going to help me.
But why do you think Rocky took all of the money?
Yeah,
that's what bothered me about it.
Yeah.
I was like, I can understand.
Yeah, she went back for more. She's a jerk.
Right. But she took it all.
And well, and Alex is sitting there. He's like, that's not 300,000 or whatever. He's like, there's got to be at least a million there. So
right.
They know they're completely screwing him over. It is like, I'm young and valuable, and I am going to take all of your money, old man, after you, like, serve this country.
That.
And then, interestingly enough, one of the very last things that she says to him is, you're worthless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she gets out of the house,
you're worthless.
She's put into the position to determine his worth.
All right. So defend Rocky then, because.
Please try.
The only defense I really have for Rocky is the fact that I think she herself is potentially in the throes of PTSD as well. We do get hints of what her home life is like, and I think the fact that she is legitimately fearful for the safety of her sister, because I kept coming back to the cast on the arm, and I kept wondering if that cast came from just being a kid.
Oh, her little sister, I guess... I missed that.
Because there seemed to be some implied violence. And then when she talks about being locked in the car or locked in the trunk of the car, it definitely paints a picture of the mother that's also supported when she says, oh, hey, you should just go and be a prostitute. So you kind of figure out what dynamics that you're working with. And I think when people get really desperate, they make really desperate choices, which is why I can be on board with her saying, yes, we're going to break into the house. Even though all indicators point to this being a really, really bad idea, I'm going to do it because I'm that desperate. It's the fact that she takes all of the money instead of just what she needs to get out that sort of tips her into unsympathetic for me.
So if she's that desperate, she may feel like nothing's enough, like that sort of fear that, you know, $100,000 isn't going to get me far enough away from these abusive people.
And I mean, if you have a history of trauma, it changes the way that your brain thinks. It changes the way that, you know, you process incoming information. And so you're going to be in more of a constant state of fight or flight and feeling unsafe. Mm-hmm. So she might not be able to think through things as well. Like I said, it explains the function of her behavior.
Right.
Yeah.
I just think that there's too much there for me to, I hate her.
There's a couple of little other things she does that I have a problem with. You know, when near-ish the beginning, when the blind man has money up against the wall with the gun and they're sort of struggling over the gun and the blind man says to Money, how many of you are there? And Money looks at her and does. I mean, even though he's been kind of a worthless character up to that point, he does the heroic thing and he says only one person is just him, which I think leads to his death. Because if there were other people there, the blind man might not have been so quick to kill him. But I think right in there, before Money's shot, Rocky looks.
The money shot?
The money shot. Wow. I'm trying to make him a sensible point here. But Rocky looks at like this bar lying on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I thought like,
pick it up.
Yeah, pick it up. Bash him over the head. Save your friend. Like, he can't see you. She could so easily have gone up to him, bashed him on the head and saved Money. But she's just like paralyzed and doesn't help him. And so that can be PTSD or just cowardice, you know, and like wanting to save herself.
All other indicators leading up to that point suggest that when she's put in that position of like fight or flight, that she fights. So why in that particular moment?
Well, she fights when it's herself in danger. She wasn't fighting when Money was
That's
in
true.
Danger.
No, she didn't care about Money.
Yeah. No, I think they were dating. Were they?
Yeah.
They were dating.
It made it seem that way.
Didn't Money say something like, she's my bitch?
Yeah.
True love.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking back on it, too. So I almost kind of started to see a link between Rocky and Cindy. Because, interestingly enough, too, the blind guy, when he's talking about what went wrong and, you know, how he was victimized by Cindy, he says, rich girls don't go to jail. Well, interestingly enough, neither does Rocky.
Right.
Yeah. And she,
now she's now a rich girl.
So now is she kind of put into the same, category.
Well, here's the other thing that bothered me about Rocky. When they first discover Cindy tied up in the basement, Rocky like goes up to her and says, I don't care what you've done. I'm going to get you out of here. And I was like,
Wow, you don't care what she's done.
Yeah, you don't care what she's done. You don't care that she killed a child, that she ruined a man's life. And I think it's because probably Rocky identifies with her even then, like before she becomes rich, you know, because the entrapment might remind her of when she was in the trunk of the car. But I hated her at that moment, too. It's like she cannot empathize with the blind man, but she sees someone who's just like her and her empathy will go that far. It's like, I will empathize with young, pretty women, but I'm not going to make that leap to try to identify with what, you know, a 50-some man has gone through.
And I think you can make a case that the blind man recognizes in Rocky a shared
he trauma. Empathizes with her.
Right, but she's
way.
Still unable to do it.
She never does with him.
With him.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the one sort of brief suggestion possibly when she's in the airport and on the screen she sees that he's survived and that he hasn't said, hey, this chick took off with my money. There's almost, like, on her face, there's almost an appreciation, almost, that he hasn't turned the cops on her. But I don't know that it's crossed the line into empathy for him. I think it's just like, hey, I got away with this.
Or, oh, look, he recognizes how important it is that I have his money.
Right.
Like, well, even he knows I should have his money because I'm more important than he is.
Well, you're young, so clearly you're more important.
More important.
Well, he makes a point, too, to talk about how everybody would still be alive if she hadn't broken into his house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, she was the one of the catalysts for that to happen, her and Money.
Absolutely.
And I don't feel like she ever gets any accountability for breaking into his house. And I don't think she ever really closes that loop for me of, oh, yeah, that's right. All my friends died. But at least I'm hopping a plane now or a train or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, she looks at the body bag for, what's his name, Alex. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. But
she's a whole
a whole
like wave of carnage in her way.
But shield shears in your chest, like.
But it's all worth it because she can go to California.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do not feel that way about Fool, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Oh no,
but the money there is shared. I mean, mm-hmm. I love that ending where the money all just like falls down on the entire community. With Rocky, it's like, this is mine. And it's always been mine, even when it was someone else's.
Yeah.
There's like a selfishness to it that I have a hard time taking.
Yeah. And honestly, Fool just took what he needed.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's
so we hate Rocky.
Yes, we do.
You've done a pretty, not a great job of defending her so far.
No, I get
the trauma.
Because even with Fool, I feel like there's a coming of age. He has changed for the better. Even he wasn't bad, but like he just makes leaps and bounds in just showing you that he's going to be this good man and, you know, caring about his community and so on and so forth. And not once do I get that sense from her.
I mean, Fool really is probably more closely aligned with the one friend that, what was his name? The one who liked her.
Alex.
Because Alex was out
of
that house.
Who was the moral authority, kind of, oh, this is
just
a
like
felony.
Fool.
We can't go beyond this.
Right.
Amount.
But like
we
Fool, he was out of the house and he came back because he felt that moral obligation.
Yeah, Rocky wouldn't have come back.
No, she would have taken the money and been like, peace out.
Or she still would have, even if she didn't walk out with money, I bet you if the boys did, she would still go and get some of that money and be like, well, I helped you. I'm the one that went in the window.
Yeah.
Selfish little brat.
Well.
That's a lot of rage there. Yeah.
I feel really a lot of rage about Rocky. And just what it says about, honestly, like the 21st century. I mean, there was a spirit of community in People Under the Stairs. And in 2016, it is like, it is all about me.
Yeah.
Just, it's about me. And did you know, guys, that there's going to be a Don't Breathe 2?
I saw that talked about.
2019 sometime, but listen to the summary. Uh-oh. It's just a short sentence on IMDb. The blind man returns to terrorize more unsuspecting people.
See what I'm saying?
What like, the hell? Who wrote that?
That gets me so angry. Like, it just gets angry.
He was just trying to sleep.
Yeah.
Who the hell was he terrorizing?
I'm not, again, it's not that we're saying that it's okay to be doing what he was doing in his basement, but
there's
so much else going on around it that I was just like, dude, he's the victim.
And I did feel like in reviews that came out about Don't Breathe, that scene in the basement got all the press.
Oh, I
you know,
agree.
Everybody was writing about that. Oh, that scene, you know, like, and they focused on the rape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, totally. It was rape. It was bad. But I think when you look at the larger context of the film, there's a lot of other bad stuff that was going on, too, that wasn't really talked about so much. I mean, he became the villain in a lot of reviews, which and I can dig up some of them and put them, you know, on the site when we put out the podcast.
But even then, if you want to believe that he's the villain, so let's just play devil's advocate.
Terrorizing more people.
He's the villain. He barely even gets a name. I mean, I had to like Google that he had a name because throughout the whole entire film, he's just the blind guy. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So even if we say that he's the villain, can't we at least look at it and say that he was created by society? Like, can we at least take some of that blame?
Yeah.
But no, I don't think IMDb will take it that far. Makes him sound like he's freaking Michael Myers.
I know.
He's just going to start following girls down the street and tilting his head.
Is Rocky returning to the movie as well?
Please, there's no.
there's only one cast member listed so far. I mean, I do remember reading something that, who is it who plays the blind man? Stephen Lang.
Stephen Lang.
Yeah.
He's so good.
He was phenomenal.
Yeah. I thought I remember reading somewhere that he was coming back, but he's not listed. There's only one cast member.
Maybe he hates the plot line based on that IMDb. He was like, wait, what?
I'm terrorizing more people.
You guys want to go to the movies with me when I go see that? I'm going to be that girl yelling at the screen.
I can
like,
only hope.
I'm going to be like, no, nope.
So I don't know that it's even in production yet. It's definitely happening.
Oh, but, I want to see that.
Yeah.
I would be interested in seeing
that. We can just hope that Rocky's back.
We can only just hope that the director is listening to us talk about this right now. We're telling you what people
want.
Yes,
exactly. And Fede Alvarez is going to be directing Don't Breathe 2. So.
Do you think it's just because he is the blind man? Do you think it's the fact that he can't see?
No, that not
tips
for me,
people
personally.
Over. For me, it's not either. It's the failure of the justice system.
Yeah, because
I still see him as so capable. Because like I said, he whoops everyone's ass. I would not mess with him. As soon as I saw him like bust out some of those first like personal safety moves, I would have been like, I'm out. I'm out.
I would love to hear from other people. If there's anyone who believes that he is a villain and that he does deserve to be out there terrorizing people, I would be very interested in hearing a defense of that because I just don't see it.
I don't either. But I also want to be clear that for as much as I'm ripping things apart, I love the movie.
Yeah.
The fact that it gets me this emotional, it's a good film.
It's a very good film.
It's well-developed characters. It's thought-provoking. So I really, really, really love the movie. I just get so angry with those kids.
Those damn kids. Get off my lawn.
Kids, yeah. I'm the crotchety old
get out
guy
of my house.
On the lawn shaking my fist now.
And we will so be back for Don't Breathe 2.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, wild horses couldn't keep me from that.
To give our impassioned interpretation of that film.
Well, I think we've said all there is to say, I think.
I know that we were talking about what film maybe possibly looking at next time.
We may do Oz, Jordan Peele's big film coming out next week. We're excited. It has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Last time I looked, with something like 45 reviews counted. So we may do Oz. We like pairing movies, we think. So we may do Oz with one of the films it kind of references.
Well, that's it for me.
That's it for me. Okay, thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.